You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Did you own the MC Hammer parachute pants when you were a young man?
If you don't believe me, I don't really care. I don't need a picture for it. I like the memory.
Giles Barnes has parachute pants, though. I think they're just catching on in Europe. Two-year-old thing.
So that's like reverse buyer's remorse.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
this is 11th, I cheated 11th a bit. Dimension chess right here, maybe.
Yeah, cheated
I'm
a little bit, yep.
That's good radio right there, guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Venice Beach, California, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC, channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. Sometimes, here is Kaelin Carr. We're out in California, man. A little bit of a different vibe here. The tide in and out. Welcome. Thank you for joining me.
I'm feeling much more at home right now. I mean, usually I'm in suffering through the craziness of Midtown Manhattan, so it's nice to get some beach vibes going.
You are
going to
get some background noises here. We're doing this bad boy on location. That's just the way it goes. You'll have to deal with that. It is Thursday. We've got a great interview coming up in the second segment with Pete Vajenas, the VP of, soccer operations, which basically encompasses just about everything with the LA Galaxy. He'll join us in the second segment. You want to stick around for that. He's going to tell us all about that high school that they've built out here in LA. They're educating and training the next group of professionals.
Questions or reactions?
Get your GED?
I just like to learn.
Exactly.
Love learning. Hi, this is Joe Johnson from the U.S. National
knowledge on this show as well. Look, the transfer window closed on Wednesday. Kaelin, there was no news. Nothing happened. Absolutely nothing in the MLS world happened. We have nothing to talk about. We probably just have to go on to some really crazy midweek games. Oh, wait. Kai Kamara on the move.
I was going to say, something happened.
Yeah, something did happen, and that would be Kai Kamara being traded. He is headed to the New England Revolution from Columbus Crew SC. We talked all about that drama, that blow-up. I mean, the whole Peepa Kai thing. Greg Berhalter kind of, he hit his hand a little bit, but in the end, they moved him right before the trade deadline. So apparently this thing went down in the middle of the night, right before the window closed, but it did get done. Here is the haul for Crew SC for their number one scorer, for a guy who was in the MVP race last year. I mean, one of the best forwards in MLS, bar none. Crew SC get Gam Tam, a first rounder in 2017, the highest second round pick of the Revs in 2018, and an international spot. A big haul for them, of course, the Revs. Well, they get a number nine who had 22 goals last year.
I feel like they just went in and were like, what are all of the different things that you can possibly get?
Let's name a few acronyms. We'll get those, and it'll all work out for us. Let's just start with our takes, and we'll go to Doyle in a second. I had him send his thoughts over, because what would it be without the armchair analyst's thoughts? Kaelin, I think you might have said that they weren't going to move him, hoping that I didn't have the memory on that one.
Yeah.
Thoughts on what went down here?
People in the office, were asking me for the inside scoop, and I didn't think anything was going to happen. I kind of thought that Berhalter was maybe playing with the media a little bit. But, Kai Snapchatted me a couple times yesterday. I started to get the hint. Not the type to break news on Snapchat.
No, though. that could be a new thing, though. I think that could work.
I kind of
like that.
I should hit up Kai for a Snapchat exclusive.
Yeah, you should. You're going to just breaking down walls, breaking down barriers in this journalism profession. Is this a good move for Kai? Is this what needed to happen?
I don't know. It's funny because what Kai was giving me, he gave me a little bit of grief because he actually watches some of my videos, which is cool. Thanks for watching, Kai. He hit me up and was like, hey, man, I thought you were a striker. What's the deal with that? And I was like, because I had said, what are we really arguing about here?
Right.
It sounds like this was maybe not about that. Pre-court, he had come out and said this is a bigger thing. I know he's not immediately involved in what's going on in that locker room.
Owner's tweeting is always fun. He came out and said, this is just one chapter in the book. He also said it's all about the team. The team is bigger than everyone else. Of course, Kai was a huge part of this team, but they'll have to move on without him.
I don't think it's a good move for Columbus, to be honest. I mean, I personally would much rather have a guy that is going to get 15, 20 goals a year than getting a bunch of maybes. Now, they got a ton of maybes. They got pretty much every maybe you could possibly get, and they're putting a lot of trust in Berhalter and the staff that they can go out and get somebody. But for me, it's like they're 3 points out of the playoffs still, even though their season hasn't been great at all.
Very early.
And you got Kai who's there, and it's like, I don't know. I don't know exactly what happened in that locker room, of course, but I would have done anything to try and hold on to him.
Ola Kamara is the supposed replacement at this point. Of course, the summer window will open and they'll have a ton of funds to work with. Supposedly some really big numbers as far as Gam and Tam being thrown around. But another Kamara for the crew. He did score last night in a friendly for the team, I think against Tiburones of Mexico. So that's something. They haven't really seen much from him this season for good reason. Kai's the man. He's their number nine. He was the one there. Now, he is, I believe, on his seventh team in 10 years. And Kai has a, he has a reputation as a guy who's emotional and can sometimes be a little bit moody. And obviously things soured at this point, and Greg Berhalter decided, well, there's just no repairing this relationship. For Kai, going to the Revs, I think a pretty good move for him. A fresh start, doesn't have to deal with everything that's going on in Columbus right now. You didn't hear a lot of contrition from him after all this.
Wait, but who's going to get the penalties? Is Leland going to give them up?
He might not be taking penalties. He might have to just write that part of it off and just say, you know what, I'm going to get these headers and get this stuff done. We'll talk a little bit more about this.
Now, I think it's great, though, for the Revs. They're getting a guy, you know, they haven't had a guy they could depend on necessarily for a ton of goals. Charlie's
done his thing.
He's done his thing, for sure. Give him some love. But, man, those two together, possibly? That could be.
Agudelo on a wing, maybe? We'll see. Wynn, Rowe, Bunbury, they got pieces.
Is anybody going to defend?
We'll see. We'll see. Speaking of analyzing this one, I'm going to throw it to the armchair analyst. We got his thoughts last night. Matt, take it away, man.
As far as the moving pieces with this trade, I mean, I kind of get it from both teams' perspectives. The crew ended up getting rid of a guy who they felt like it was just untenable. They couldn't have him on the team anymore. And they got a ton of funds for him. They got, I think, Gam, Tam, a couple of picks. I mean, who knows what else? A few more moving pieces, I'm sure. And then they now have 7 games until the transfer window opens. And they can sort of ride that out and then bring all their forces to bear this summer and find a younger, hopefully better version of Kai Kamara. Easier said than done, of course. This guy has 31 goals in his last 46 games. But look, when you burn the bridges that thoroughly, I guess you got to do what you got to do. And for New England, they weren't going to use those funds anyway. We've heard year after year after year, Revs fans complain that their team never goes out and gets high-profile guys. And, you know, spoiler alert, that's not going to change. Instead, they got a proven MLS player who is a DP, but a sort of a low-end DP. They're not breaking the bank for him. And he fits what they want to do exactly. I just went over the numbers, and the Revs are averaging 1.4 million crosses per game. They just bend in so many crosses, and there's nobody better in the league, really in North America, at attacking those crosses than Kai Kamara. So he fits what they do. He's a plug-and-play solution, and he makes them better. And the only assets they gave up, it was stuff that they weren't using anyway. So it makes sense. The one hesitation I have on behalf of the Revs is that over the last 2 weeks, Juan Agudelo has looked awesome. And, you know, we've talked about this on the show before. Every year we talk, you know, he has a couple of good games and we talk ourselves into, this is the year for Juan Agudelo. He's finally going to live up to all his potential. Well, that's not going to happen as a center forward now. If it happens, it's going to happen as a second forward or on the wing. And I think come July, when the trade and transfer window reopens, he might be on the block, or Kellen Rowe might be on the block, or Teal Bunbury might be on the block, or Charlie Davies might be on the block. One of those guys is going to have to go. That's the fallout from acquiring Kai Kamara. But in the short term, I think the Revs just got a lot better. And the crew, maybe they saved their locker room. It's got to hurt to give up a guy who's scored that many goals, though. be careful what you wish for, crew fans.
Well, there's Doyle's take right there. Good stuff from him. Thank you for checking in with us from San Francisco Bay Area in the Octagon with the Cats. By the way, I'm staying at my buddy's house, 2 Cats. I'm getting a little bit of a hint of Doyle's life. It's insane. It's just crazy. I had to lock him out. I had to keep him away. They're a little too crazy in the middle of the night. Look, he goes to the Revs, Kai does, and they're second right now in open crosses in MLS. They cross the ball. Yeah. They just don't have a guy to get in there and slam dunk it. You heard Doyle say it there, Kai might be the best in North America at attacking balls in the box.
Well, that's why I was saying Columbus lost a lot.
Right.
There is really no equivalent to Kai in MLS. You know, he is a singular type player in our league, and that's a lot to give up. You know, I think.
And some pressure on the other guys, because this is a team that went to MLS Cup, that played in front of their home fans, that expected something similar this year by keeping the roster together, and they had the pieces, they have the attacking pieces. Does it ramp up pressure on that team to lose a guy like this, or does it kind of, do the expectations change?
With Columbus?
Yeah.
Yeah, their expectations change immediately. I mean, they don't have, they even lost Jack McInerney, who is a guy who they could depend on for some goals to come off the bench, so... Their system is based on possession all the way, but you got to have somebody who can finish that off in the box, and Kai was the guy, and he was getting it done.
He was getting it done. As I said, Ola Kamara, probably the one to come in. Connor Casey on that roster as well. You'd think that in this transfer window, they go look around. I mean, they kind of have to at this point. You got to add something up top. There are three meetings to go this season between these two teams. At New England on July 9th, so a little while. August 20th in New England. September 25th in Columbus.
I'm really excited to see the New England Revolution celebrations. Like, that was already one of the best celebrating teams in the league. But once you throw Kai into the mix, like some of the planning with even Kellen Rowe, Fagundes, you know, Charlie.
Does Kai have to put some color in his hair? Does he have to put like a streak in there? And maybe
I feel
go
like
purple,
he's
going to
change. There's going to be something
pink,
changed. Yeah.
Something just to fit in? Or is that maybe, I mean, that might lead to some more beef. You don't want to take the spotlight away from Diego.
I think he's got the top knot market cornered.
He does.
Right
he
now.
Does. What if you put the color in the top knot? What if it's like a, you know.
I mean, if he's got Dom Maduro's his boy, so he could maybe go up and see his barber.
And I'm sure Dom has a guy out there. And well, he probably has a guy in every market, I believe.
He has a guy traveling with him.
Yeah,
on the
he probably
everywhere.
Does. Just give him a call. Fly him in. Like I said, three matches coming up this year. Interesting stuff. Really, really fun deadline in this. Sometimes these things come and go without any real news, and you're just waiting for something. This time we didn't have to wait.
I feel like Kai and Dom Maduro may be in a competition to see who can play for the most MLS teams.
That's a good point, actually. That's a good point. Who's some other guys in that racket? I'm missing the name. I'll come up with it later in the show. He's on the tip of my tongue. If you've got some, let us know. If you've got thoughts, I know you have thoughts. Hit us up at Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com. Chilling out here at Venice Beach, doing our thing. MLS midweek went down last night, Kalen. Let's talk a little bit about it. We'll start with Philly and LA, a 2-2 draw at Talon Energy Arena. Keegan Rosenberry. I'm getting all these K. Clarin, Kalen, Keegan.
Goal. You don't have to get it right on his first goal.
Yeah, he's got to prove it a little bit more. But he played great in this match. Really nice start from this rookie defender. But this was a game, I think, between two teams, two very, very good teams, that we're seeing the best of, starting to see the best of now. And I think it's a strange thing because we always talk about home results and how important that is to making the playoffs and how important it would be to Supporters Shield. But the Union, for them, I think they walk away from a 2-2 draw in this sense saying, that was a good result for us, and that was a good performance. And that doesn't always happen, but LA's starting to click, and to get this one, I think they feel good about themselves. I think they think, you know, if you're Jim Curtin, you walk away saying, this is a man's performance. This is what we want to see from our guys. A couple breaks go a different way, they would have won this game.
Yeah, I think a lot of times, Philly's had a great start to the season, but people want to see how you do against the big boys, you know? And Jim even said so. I think he called him the Patriots of MLS.
He did. That was an interesting analogy.
Yeah. But I think that's a pretty good one in a way, because even within a team, within a locker room, when you go against a big team, you take a little bit more away from it, knowing you were able to get a good result.
Yeah, so. Giovanni Dos Santos with a nice game here. That build-up to Robbie Rogers' goal was really, really impressive. The slip ball by Robbie Keane, that might be one of the best through balls of the year so far. Perfect weight, a nice little dink toward the end line from Giovanni, and Robbie gets his goal. Mike McGee with a nice one in this one. Steven Gerrard had high points, he had low points. Kind of sums up his MLS career. It's all high points at home, though, for the Rapids. 1-0 win, 6-0 at home. Sporting KC still sliding. I think that's seven games without a win now. Dylan Serna with the goal in this one. Aiko Parra with a red card that Sporting KC fans went absolutely bat blank crazy about on Twitter. My brother was texting me saying, this is robbery, this is no good. You know, Jermaine Jones scissor tackled him. I'm not sure I agree. I'm not sure I think it was a second yellow either, but as it stood off that free kick, Rapids score. I mean, everything's coming up Rapids. Every single thing right now is coming up Rapids. This is one of the, if not the most incredible stories in the league right now.
Yeah, it's crazy to see. I mean, I have friends texting me on the other side to be like, are the Rapids really for real? Like, I mean, and how good is Jermaine Jones? Yeah. Is he really making this big of a difference? And I think they are legit. They're, when I watch them play, they have so much size all over the field.
Yep.
So they're, I think they're a really tough matchup athletically for teams. And I really like Kevin Doyle's movement up top. He gives them a nice little element of, you know, some mobility up there.
People asked about the goals from him, but that's not – that's not all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, a lot of those goals that you see from Jermaine Jones have been off of, you know, that nice little cutback from last week. He helps them a ton.
Yeah, he does. A great win for Colorado. They got a big game this weekend. We'll probably talk about that in just a little bit. Blas Perez, my guy. What a bicycle kick. A 2-1 victory for Vancouver against the Chicago Fire. This was another 2-1 win for them. They remember, they just won in Cascadia by that same scoreline, kind of pulling themselves up by their bootstraps through the Panamanian. A lot of Panamanian goals this week. We'll talk about that in a little bit as well.
Masato,
great goal.
Kudo, though.
That was what I was going to ask you. Thoughts go out to him, man. That's tough.
I mean, I've almost never seen a tackle, or it's not a tackle.
A collision.
A collision that scary.
Did you have times in your career where you're steaming into like a 50-50 like that with the goalkeeper and you're thinking, or you're trying not to think, you're just like, something could happen here?
That happens all the time. I mean, those moments, that's the thing. It wasn't something you could really even see coming, even as a viewer. I got flipped once in a game my first year, like legitimately flipped head over heels. There was a photo of it actually in ESPN the magazine that was pretty cool of me upside down. But
it's a high point.
Yeah, maybe not the best conversation fodder for a podcast. That'd
right.
Be, yeah.
Right.
Look, you can check out the video.
Thoughts go out to Kudo. We really hope he's okay and comes back soon. It was a scary moment. That's absolutely not what you want to see on the field. We'll get to the weekend in just a second, but first, a 3-1 win for San Jose. Houston, the slide continues for them despite that win against Kansas City. Panama goes ham. I said Panama because I was thinking ham.
Okay.
Quintero, two goals here. Anibal Godoy with a beautiful goal. Some really, really poor defending from the Dynamo. Tyler Derrick with a moment he'll want to forget, a whiff on a clearance. Then he tries to grab Simon Dawkins. Gets the red on that one, but San Jose keeps on rolling. Houston, your boys, man, it's not going well.
No, it's not. Jaleel Anibaba, though, makes a nice
save.
Ooh,
yeah.
That's not what you want to come away as your positive from a match. Tough times right now for the Dynamo. The San Jose team is for real, though. They're a playoff team. I've said it all along. That goal, the combination play between Godoy and Quintero was beautiful.
It was delicious. Was delicious. A really nice goal. They'll be happy with that result in San Jose. A quick U.S. Open Cup shout-out before we get to the weekend. FC Wichita, my boys, hometown, Tawtown. They lost 2-1. They're out of it.
Yeah,
it is a thing. Tawtown.
Oh my gosh.
They lost the Des Moines Menace. It's okay, guys. A really good performance from you. Way to bring the Open Cup to Wichita. Proud of you. Let's go to the weekend, and we'll start on Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. UniMas, DC, New York, rivalry match. Good stuff. One you'll want to catch for sure. And DC on Twitter, Kalen, have been calling the Red Bulls New Jersey. That's rugged, man. That's tough.
I like it.
I kind of do, too.
Yeah, I think that's pretty funny. I like it.
So this is a big game for both of these teams. You want to tune into that one for sure.
You want to see if DC is healthy.
Yeah.
Like they're not a team that can afford to have guys off.
They just signed a Kamara, by the way.
Did they?
Yeah.
Another
Kamara into the league coming from Scandinavia.
I like
Scored
it.
Some goals last year in Sweden, I believe. And I think his team might have won the league, but they needed some stuff up front. You knew Saborio over the course of the season probably wasn't going to stay healthy, so we'll see. Of course, the spindle has been in and out, but a big game to watch on UniMas, 7 p.m. Eastern. You'll want to check that one out on Friday night. On Sunday, a couple big games as well. SKC Orlando at 3:30 on ESPN. Portland, New York City, 7:30 on FS1. Always like that little gap in the middle. You can go get dinner, go hang out, do your thing. That's good stuff. But before we get to Pete, before we get to the LA Galaxy Academy, I want to know what your MLS Live game of the weekend might be. I'm going to start out with mine. I think there are two that are especially delicious. Actually, I think there are four, but the two I want to watch are at the same time, double boxing time. Columbus, Colorado, of course, the Rapids, we just talked about them. They're rolling. They're at the top of the supporter shield. They're doing their thing. And how will Columbus respond after this big trade? I'm not sure. Also at 7:30, Kai, New England, Chicago, in New England, does he start? Do they just throw him into the lineup?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's itching to go. He's motivated. I think he likes the attention on him right now.
No doubt.
I think he's going to show performance. It's really a matter of what goal celebration he's going to do. Sorry, Chicago fans, but I want to know, what has Kai got planned for this game. I feel like it's going to do something creative.
Revs fans, hit us up. What do you want to see? What could you see? Get your imaginations going. At Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. Dallas, Seattle, also a good call there. 9 p.m. Eastern, MLS Live. Toronto, Vancouver, Canada, back at BMO again, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, TSN 4, RDS. Between those two, which has got you going? I mean, you've got J-Mo going for five in a row in that Dallas-Seattle game.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be watching that Toronto-Vancouver game. I think seeing those games at BMO Field now, it's just a ridiculous, incredible crowd. That atmosphere alone will make it worth watching.
Want to see if they can one-up themselves. Make sure you tune in this weekend on MLS Live, ESPN, FS1, Unimas, it's all there for you.
But I'm actually going up to Montreal. I'm going to go watch that game against Philly, so I may not be able to even watch it.
You might not, Your memory just
coming up. So Montreal, Philly.
If you want to say
I'm
what's up to him.
Much. Venice, Montreal, New York, it's tough to keep track of.
All right, we're going to go jump in the water real quick. Not really, but we'll be back for the second segment in just 1 minute.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, this is Josie Altador from the U.S. national team, and you're listening to MLS Extra Time Radio.
Welcome back now on Extra Time Radio. I am Andrew Wiebe. We are here in Los Angeles with LA Galaxy Vice President of Soccer Operations, Pete Vajanas. Pete, how's it going, man? Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you, man. It's going very well. I can't complain.
This is, every time I talk to you, you have a new title. Every single time. It's like I have to go look it up because it changes the rapid ascent from MLS midfielder to vice president. How'd all this go down?
I guess I'll take that as a compliment. Apparently, I'm either doing a very good job or a very, very poor job, and they can't find the right place for me. But thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So it was the academy, I believe, last time. Now you got the USL side under your banner. You're doing the first team.
Yeah.
What are you? Give me the rundown here. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's obviously a more encompassing role. Strategically, I'm trying to align the soccer side of our club, encompassing the first team, Galaxy 2, and obviously all the way down through our academy. Our club, Major League Soccer in general, Andrew, as you know, is really at a tipping point here. First teams are becoming clubs. Professional soccer teams are becoming fully built out and realized clubs. So it's a testament to soccer in this country. But again, there's a lot that goes into this. And we are attempting to become a well-oiled machine here in Los Angeles, if we're not already one.
Tougher job, MLS midfielder or the guy who's putting all this together? What do you put more time into? This has got to take a lot of your life, huh?
You know, Andrew, that's an interesting comment. When I retired, my wife thought that I would be spending more time at home. And as you know, in the quote-unquote real world, I find myself working all hours of the day. But again, I'm passionate. I have, as I say, this club in my blood. So I can't complain. I'm very fortunate. I wake up every morning and I come to work, but it is something that I bleed and I truly love it.
We will get into, of course, the academy and the blended learning program. That's a fancy way of saying the high school that these guys go to here at the StubHub Center and then are able to roll over to the training fields. We saw them we got this morning. I think they get two trainings a day, which is a pretty incredible thing for a young player. What was for you, and we see this all the time with guys coming out of their careers, finding a new path, figuring out where they're going. Some go right into this technical side, some stay in the league, some go do their own thing in the business world. What was the biggest adjustment for you? What did you look at when that happened and say, okay, I got to make some changes here. This is where my focus is now going to have to go.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I've been asked that quite a bit. And I'm fairly comfortable saying I did not have it all figured out as my career was winding down. I was smart enough to know that the end was closer than the beginning was. And I tried to piece together sort of that what's next that I think most professional athletes have. And I'm comfortable saying that I didn't know my direction. I knew I loved the game. I knew I loved this club. I knew I loved this city. But it very much, for a lot of athletes, comes down to, are you going to coach or go the other route? And I was torn at first because I had the fortunate career of being a product of what I believe to be tremendous coaches. I didn't have a lot of them from my youth career with Afshin Gopi to my college professional years with Ziggy Schmidt and the Bruce Arenas of the world and the few in between. They were spectacular and they all shaped me in different ways and they impacted me more so than just on the soccer field. So I was drawn to that impact, but it wasn't necessarily purely based in soccer, if that makes sense. So I was always open to different avenues, different endeavors. I've obviously stayed close to AEG and the ownership group here because of my ties. Chris Klein was a fantastic mentor, if you will, someone I could lean on that had not too much earlier gone through a similar process. So I had a help along the way for sure. And I'm happy to say that I found myself on the other side of this, and I wouldn't have changed one part of it.
Shaping young lives as it so happens now. I mean, I think you read these articles about what the Galaxy are doing, what Real Salt Lake is doing, what the Union are doing, and the youth development space is rapidly, it's almost like an arms race in some sense. It's rapidly developing, and a lot of money is going into it. You're really in charge of, as you said, kind of streamlining this process up to the first team.
Yeah.
Take me into the logic and the timing and the investment that you guys have made in this academy system, and specifically in the idea that you're going to have a standalone high school where these guys can, A, learn, but B, develop as soccer players in the best possible environment.
Right. So it's an interesting question. And for me, it is, again, and I alluded to it earlier, I think you are seeing, and we are at the forefront of this, and very much Major League Soccer was made up of teams that represented first teams, teams that would play on the weekend, and that was it. You've seen over the years these teams develop into clubs. And the natural progression of that is really the production and the protection of our assets, and that's our players. I think for us, we have an incredible opportunity to operate our business efficiently, and that starts with developing our best players, not simply acquiring them. In my ideal world, Andrew, you're looking at an LA Galaxy team that will continue to spend to bring in the biggest stars in the world, and they will stand side by side with players that are grown from within our club. A big piece of this for me, and it brings us into the discussion in terms of our environment now and the blended learning environment in our high school. As a club, we are very proud of the individuals that come through our club, not only their ability on the field, but who they represent, what they represent off the field. It's a big part of our business and what we think that we produce. Having these kids in our environment from 8 o'clock in the morning until 4 o'clock in the afternoon, treating them like professionals, putting them in training environments on the field that is similar in content and programming that we do with our Galaxy 2 team up through our first team, it begins to close the gap in terms of that transition. I think historically, we are obviously very fortunate to be in Los Angeles. And again, this city is a passion of mine. And we have a lot of fantastic athlete soccer players coming out of Southern California. For us not to tap into our own market and make sure that we produce these kids, in my opinion, would be foolish. So it's very much a methodical approach. We're very much in it as we speak. We do have a long ways to go, but we do have fantastic shining examples that we can point to as of right now that this process is working. And we will continue to refine it and tweak it as we go because we don't have all the answers. But it is something that we are committed to and we are committed to for the long haul.
So that's 8 hours a day in the guidance of the LA Galaxy and your staff. That's a responsibility to these young men and also to their parents.
So
what's that day look like? How do you sell a parent on doing something like this?
So it's interesting, Andrew. And I cower a bit when people talk to me about our youth development initiative because it is representative of a lot of people. And people are pointing to me and coming to me with the questions, the praises, the adulation, and all of it. It is truly the work of our club.
Somebody's got to be the figurehead. Watch out. There might be some negative stuff at some point, too. Who knows?
Sure.
Who
knows? When we talk about creating that environment that we want to uphold, it is the work of a small army. So for me, you asked me how we sell it. We don't necessarily sell it. We open our doors to our families, and we readily admit to what we are and what we're not. The decision is very much theirs, but we are firmly rooted not only in what we are giving these kids in terms of their soccer education, the curriculum, the way this manifests itself in terms of the classroom. We are also educating young men. We know very well what the statistics are, but again, I am firmly rooted in the belief that we are not only graduating professional soccer players, Andrew, we are graduating young men into this world, and whether they become a doctor, whether they never play soccer again, the habits, the day-to-day life lessons that they've learned in this environment, in this professional environment, with the obstacles that they face, with the staff that we have guiding them, I truly believe that we are graduating better human beings. And if that's all that we have at the end of the day, it's something that I will embrace, but I promise you that you will be seeing some special athletes coming from our academy
system. I think
that's
the hope as well. So I'll say I'm walking in the door. I'm maybe 15 years too old for this at this point. I'm walking in the door at 8 a.m. What am I doing? How does this all go down?
Yeah,
so day go?
If you can picture it, it's an environment that's very similar to our first team. We have locker rooms dedicated to our academy kids. So
I'm getting taped up. I'm maybe getting a massage.
They're getting let's slow down here because they're young kids and they don't necessarily need massages.
Okay, maybe that's my 30-year-old body talking to you right there.
They're very much walking into a professional environment. They have a training room. They have a dedicated medical staff. They have training facilities, you know, three or four doors down from the first team, two or three doors down from Bruce Arena. They get dressed, they walk out to the hall, and they will on a daily basis walk past a Steven Gerrard. They will pass Robbie Keane. They will run into Giovanni Dos Santos in the weight room. They will walk past Jossie Zardes on the way to lunch. And Andrew, that is a big piece of this. You talk about your age, and I will date myself. As a kid growing up, all I had was maybe a game to watch in television. And when you're aspiring to become a professional, sometimes that's hard when all you have is something on television. Our kids can walk past their dream and literally reach out and touch him, and he's tangible. And the steps that he's going through is very much some of the same steps that they go through. For me, that means something. It brings them that much closer to this dream that they have. So when they show up in the morning, they'll go through their paces, and then they walk out to their field, and they'll have a session that'll start 9:30, 9 a.m., 10 a.m., and they'll train an hour and a half. After that, it's back to their dedicated space again. They'll shower up. They'll receive whatever treatment they have. They have their dedicated space where they eat. It's catered by the same company that caters our first team and our second piece. They are a little bit more of a tight schedule because from there, as you know, professional athletes maybe have the rest of the day to negotiate. Our kids are required to...
It's a fancy way of saying nap, right?
Yeah. Our kids are required to walk to campus and walk to their classroom, and they begin their studies. The best part about this schedule is it is flexible, but we do maintain some semblance of a schedule because they are kids and they respond to that. So they will, you know, on average, have about 3 hours in the classroom, and depending on the day of the week, some of the group will be dedicated to weightlifting. Some of the group will be dedicated to a second session. Some of the group will be dedicated to some type of extracurricular activity, whatever that means. It could be soccer associated. It could be something on the education side in terms of field trips and whatnot, depending on the year. Some of it might be nothing because sometimes the best thing is for them to get away. And a big piece of this for me, Andrew, having been in the youth space for some time, and that is lost on parents, and I think it's something that they were drawn to. If you can picture this, a kid's day is ending around 4 o'clock, 4:30, and they're able to find themselves going home. For the first time in a long time, a 16-year-old kid is able to sit at the dinner table with his brother and sister and family and have a meal around dinner time. In the previous model, families were split apart, and
Training time. That's driving time.
Mom was in the car driving kids from practice, and you wouldn't really not see each other, maybe cramming in homework at 9 p.m. at night. Andrew, the reality of the situation is we had kids driving an hour and a half, 2 hours one way in the afternoon to get to training. They would jump in the car after practice, catch fast food, get to the training with their backpack, run onto the field, back in the car, do homework, grab fast food, get home by 10 o'clock. Our kids are structured in that manner to where their days are very much from 8 a.m. until about 4 p.m., and then they can go home and plug into some semblance of an ordinary life. We're about 12 months into this model. I have seen the change, knowing the kids in our academy, having been associated with them for a long time. I have seen the change in them, not only physically, Andrew, but I have seen the change in them in terms of ownership of their own time. I love saying this, but it's been said to me by youth experts around the country. When they see our players, they are like mini professionals. That brings a smile to my face because it's ultimately what we're trying to instill. A lot of these kids have the talent, more than not have the talent that could make it. What separates them, as you know, sometimes is that mentality, is that final piece. If we can get that ingrained to them, 15, 14 years old even, it just makes that transition easier. Those gaps become smaller. And as we go through this, we should exponentially be able to see those tangible results on a Saturday night.
So is this the sort of thing where we're going to see, and we're already seeing this, more and more of these kids take the latter approach as opposed to straight to MLS? Is there going to be, do you envision this being generally a, you're in this program, you're in the academy, you thrive, you do your thing. Maybe with the youth national teams, you play some games for LA too, both out of the academy as a non-professional, and then maybe you sign your professional deal with LA too, and then make the jump when you're ready. You guys have been so good about signing that USL guy and developing them and getting them to the point where they're MLS ready.
Yeah, again, and for us, and again, it comes down from fantastic support from our ownership, the amount of resources that we pour into this. You hit the nail on the head. We're not attempting to sell ourselves. What you described in terms of the technical path of these kids, it's the most logical progression for these kids. It is easy to throw out any type of contract to any 17-year-old that we can find and get him to sign a contract. The trick is actually ensuring that these kids have a professional career, and I'm talking sustained profession in this game, 6-8 years as a professional player, earning money, supporting your family. We want these kids to have careers, not just their first contract. It's difficult to drop every single kid into one bucket because there are outliers, and we're going to have to approach them as we arise. And again, it is not a completely ironed out system just from the fact that we are using two different leagues, and sometimes things don't add up ideally. What I can assure you, in terms of a club, technically, we are attempting to line this up for what makes sense for the general masses in terms of the kids that we are producing.
So you look at what this path is and the amount you're investing in. You guys are doing what looks to be an incredible job. I want you to take a big picture approach, a macro approach to youth development in this country. When you look around, what can we do better? What are small things, big things, whatever it may be that you think are worth our time and attention and investment?
Yeah, this is interesting. And again, we have been at the forefront of this discussion. And what I think the challenge we face for youth development in this country is, and I'm going to shoot you straight here, I think for the longest time, we have taken, I don't know if it is necessarily the right approach in terms of our soccer. I think as Americans, for far too long, we have looked too much outside to see what's working and tried to apply it here. And while there is genius in that to a point, I think we've developed a league culture in this country where we're at the point where, you know, we can put our stake in the ground and identify what's best for us, what's best for American soccer, what's best for Major League Soccer. And for me, with that approach, the trickle-down effect is there is no right or wrong answer to paint the entire United States of America. You cannot wire tightly youth development across that broad of a geography because it doesn't make sense. You look at countries like Belgium, for example, that are producing all this talent. It is such a specified, targeted group, targeted demographic that you can be unified in your one approach. I think as a society, as a culture, we have to be comfortable empowering our Major League Soccer teams, the beacons of soccer that are spaced fairly well in our country, and allowing them to target their market. The way we develop talent in California is different than the way the Red Bulls should develop talent in New York. If not for the simple attributes of our players are different. The climate is different. The types of players that we have seen that come through different parts of the country, Andrew, and you can start from the beginning of soccer and Major League Soccer, they are different types of players that come from different types of markets. And it's not to say one is better than the other, but it's okay if the Galaxy's development when it comes to youth is a little bit different than the way Vancouver approaches it, or is a little bit different than the way FC Dallas approaches it, or a little bit different than the way the Red Bulls approach it. I think we're finally in a place, and we have the right people in place, that we can put our fist down and say, this is how we are going to do it, and continue to encourage MLS clubs to drive the discussion when it comes to youth development, because there is a targeted way to go about this. You bring in the national team, and if I'm speaking candidly, and we've made such progress with our national teams, right, in terms of where we've come, just in my lifetime with the U.S. national team and how far we've come, you can make the argument that the biggest driver of our success at the national team has been the growth of Major League Soccer and the types of players that Major League Soccer is producing. Well, it's only the natural next step that Major League Soccer has continued to be empowered and continue to push sort of the initiatives in terms of youth development. And we've come a long ways. The relationships between U.S. Soccer and Major League Soccer, we continue to find synergies to sort of tick both boxes of what, let's say, U.S. Soccer would classify as youth development versus what Major League Soccer would classify as youth development at the younger ages. I'm not entirely certain that we're on the same page, and that's fine. But for me, Major League Soccer and the clubs and the amount of resources that they're pouring in and the reasons behind why they're actually doing it, trying to mold professional players that are going to make it to the next level, I think they're dialed into their market. So, again, this is a roundabout way of me answering your question that MLS soccer, MLS clubs continue, they need to drive deeper into this market. They need to continue to be empowered to grab hold of youth development because they are the ones with the boots on the ground. They are the ones that can really bring this project to fruition. And at the end of the day, the U.S. national team are going to bear the fruits of those labors anyways.
Are we, how much better are players now? Are they better? Because I look at, you know, people will be listening to the show and they'll be saying, well, we're not in Brazil. You know, our performances at U20 World Cups, U17 World Cups, even against CONCACAF competition at those levels, hasn't been what we've wanted it to be.
Right.
When you see that and you see the players in your academy and you see the players they're playing against,
how do you
kind of negotiate them?
It's a valid argument for sure because from 30,000 feet, that's how you're going to have to look at it. It's why, for me, that we cannot judge youth development by simply the measures of our youth national teams and their qualifications and whatnot. Should that be a piece of it? Absolutely. But it does force us to ask why we aren't achieving those results. But for me, again, the answers to that lie within the MLS clubs and the way that they're developing players. There are examples like that that can point to, well, maybe our players aren't getting better. I can also lead up to examples in terms of we are at college soccer drafts and we are seeing sort of the top players that are coming out of college. And this is in no way trying to disregard college soccer and what they're doing because they very much, in my opinion, have a place in the landscape of soccer in this country. But we sat at an MLS draft in terms of our club and I'm comfortable saying that we were not able to identify a player that was better than the ones that we had coming through, and we had the highest draft pick we have had in a long time. And we opted out to not pick that player and continue to focus in what we're doing here internally. So there are examples on both sides. For me, what comes from it is the continued initiative to put it on our Major League Soccer teams to continue to invest heavily into youth and to empower them to make the right decisions. I think
own your market and maximize it.
Your market and maximize it. And for me, U.S. soccer, youth soccer, national teams, they will be the ones that will ultimately bear the fruits of those labors.
So let's talk 5 years from now, and I'll let you go get back to work here. What are we going to see change? What's percolating in your mind? What's percolating in other people like you? What's the next step? Or are we just working through it?
Yeah, I think we're working through it. I think that's part of it. And I'm comfortable to say that we work through it daily. But if I'm looking down the line here at five years' time, I'm comfortable sharing that our ultimate vision is to have a team that represents this club that is obviously made up of the world's biggest stars, supported by kids that come from within our system. Are we going to miss along the way? Of course, because this is not an exact science. But for me, if I'm speaking holistically, that is our approach. We have the opportunity to own and maximize our market, and we believe that we have talent coming through that can carry us at a first-team level and carry us to, you know, the results that our fans have been accustomed to.
There you have it. LA Galaxy Vice President of Soccer Operations, Pete Vahanas. Pete, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure, man.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Alejandro Bedoya from the U.S. national team, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, Andrew Wiebe, Kaylin Carr. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Pete Vahanas, the VP of Soccer Ops at the LA Galaxy. Cool stuff they're doing there. Cool stuff going around all over the league. We don't want you to think that it's just the Galaxy doing this. This is a widespread movement. It's very, very exciting for a lot of folks. Let's jump in here. Joey Jedlowski, guys, I think something went pretty under the radar from last week. And Ryan Hollingshead, he had a 10-minute performance in goal after Jesse Gonzalez went down injured. He says he loves seeing outfield players take the field as a keeper. He's thinking back to Mike McGee. He's thinking back to his own fourth-grade appearance for the St. Pius Panthers team in Omaha Catholic School League. He filled in, saved the PK, and they won after the goalie went for a red card. Kaylin, who's the guy? Goalie? You got goalie in you? Anybody ever call on you maybe in training?
I don't think so. I want to see the opposite. I don't know how this would ever happen. But
get a goalkeeper in the field.
A goalkeeper had to play on the field for some reason.
I like that.
Like Nick Raimondo, maybe playing number 10
spot. Is Nick Raimondo the guy that you look at and say?
He's got really good feet. Come on.
He's the guy who would be the best field player?
Who's good? I think I would maybe put David Bingham up top, like he could be a striker for me.
Yeah.
He's got the haircut for me.
He does. He seems a little bit ruthless as well.
He's got good feet, too.
Well, let us know who you think. Who should hit the field and in what position. We'll move on, though. Liam in Parts Unknown. He says he's not sure what the point of LAFC is. The Galaxy, he says, have LA dominated, and LAFC don't have history or traditions. I mean, that's obvious. They haven't started.
That's hard to do at
this
point.
Yeah, you don't have that because you haven't played. He says, who are these LA fans that don't already have allegiance to the Galaxy? He says it's going to be Chivas all over again. Excited for expansion, but he compares this to a new team, a new NFL team in Green Bay. No, man. I'm sorry. No. I'm out here.
Is that Pete Fahanas?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, good. Yeah. Is that you, Chris Klein?
Yeah.
Under Liam? Look, this city is huge. It took us an hour to go a matter of 10 miles this morning. Like, there is a market for this, and there are plenty of soccer fans in this area. And I think, I got to be honest, on that same highway, I already saw a number of stickers on cars for LAFC, which was a little surprising to me. As we said, they don't really have a history. They haven't done it yet. They don't have signings. They don't have a coach. The stadium's come in, but I think there's plenty of room.
I saw an LAFC hat here in Venice just walking down.
Really?
I think what they're doing is cool. I mean, they're kind of going after being the kind of like cool it thing, especially having a downtown stadium.
And the Galaxy are the winners already. They got the championships.
Yeah, the Galaxy are going to be fine. I think it's going to be cool to see that kind of go both directions. And LAFC, I think while they're going to be a club that has celebrities and that big star power, they're also doing a lot of stuff already in the community, which is pretty cool. I went and saw them with a shout out, my boy John Thorrington. Took me to go see their under-12 team play in this like really cool warehouse space.
Hey, thanks for
downtown
the
LA. This was not this trip.
Okay.
This was before.
Right.
I'm in LA all the time.
Come okay, on. Good. Just making sure. That would have been tough. I feel a little bad about
dude,
that.
We'll show you around. Okay. We're going to have a good time, man. We're at the beach.
Look, I know I'm from Kansas, but I got some swag. I can do it out here in
you're
LA.
You're Brooklyn, yeah.
That's true. We'll go to Matt in Denver to finish it off here before we get out of here. We asked about some ideas for Carson in Italy, who emailed in last week. Carson, of course, was trying to build up some LA Galaxy fan base over there in Europe and saying, how do I get people involved? And Matt has some experience in this field. He says he worked in grad school in a lab where he was the only American. Everybody likes soccer, but they followed their home country's leagues and the Champions Leagues and yada, yada, yada. He says the way he did it, he started to connect them with people that they would connect with. So the South Koreans, YP Lee in Vancouver. He got them on that bandwagon. The French couple, Henri, Red Bulls. Chelsea fans, hey, Drogba's in MLS now, and his team wears a color blue that you may just like. He says Carson's got a great opportunity here to get his Italian friends in MLS by having them watch Giovinco. Easy one there. And Pirlo, also, he says, get him to watch a couple teams, show him some highlights, see what kind of soccer they like, and then try to be matchmaker. Try to pair him up with some people. He also says he wrote the Rapid Man fan fiction last month, and I said, and I remember this, that I would give him MLS Live because I thought it was just an incredible email. Well, Matt in Denver, you're going to get some MLS Live. I assume you're a Rapids fan. Enjoy this run you're on right now. Look, we got a minute and a half left. I'm going to get you one more. R. Connor Rivera, what's the least sexy MLS Cup right now? He says Colorado, Philadelphia. I say, I don't care about that least sexy. That sounds like a pretty good matchup right now, honestly. I could get down with that. A little Sapong, Pontius, Jermaine Jones.
Yeah, that actually would be a good one. I don't know why people would say that.
What's your prediction right now? Let's just throw out a prediction.
For MLS Cup?
Yeah, dude, why not?
Come on, man.
I know. Why
you
not?
Know I can't do that.
Why not?
I got traded yesterday.
Yeah,
I picked Columbus before the season.
So did I.
So now it's like...
Yeah, but see, our picks got blown up. We got to go back at it. We got to just try it again.
Colorado Rapids all the way.
Okay.
Come back to me in like a month.
Okay. Let's see. I'm going to throw down a Rapids fan fiction there too. I think Rapids man's going to take the field, have a big game.
Do you think we're just going to be bandwagon people now, just because we're jumping on the Colorado?
Kind of feels like it, doesn't it?
If you're going to jump on a train though, that's like a pretty hip Brooklyn Venice Beach train to jump.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, it's like, you know, where did they come from? I don't know. Like 5 years from now, everybody's going to be wearing Rapids gear, and it's going to be no big deal. You pick them, you won't even be cool. But okay, look, that's it for us. A bunch of big games this weekend you want to watch. And remember, Friday, DC Red Bulls, that's a huge rivalry match on Unima, 7 p.m. Eastern. SKC Orlando, ESPN, 3:30 on Sunday. Finish it off, Portland, NYC, FS1. You can follow it on MLSsoccer.com, MLS Live, the MLS app.
Oh, also, if you're in Montreal, I'm going to be there this weekend, so come find me in the crowd and say what's up.
There you go. Hit them up. We'll catch you on Monday, guys. Have a good one.